The possible delay was announced after inspectors found a crack in the foam insulation on the fuel tank. In 2003, a problem with the foam caused the shuttle Columbia to break up, killing the 7 astronauts on board. In North Carolina, a former U.S. soldier has been charged with raping and killing an Iraqi woman and 3 of her family members. He'd already been discharged from the Army for a personality disorder, so he could be tried in either a civilian or military court. Across Iraq today, at least 16 people were killed and dozens wounded in scattered attacks. Among the dead is a U.S. Marine who was killed in Anbar province. In Gaza, one person was reportedly killed and 2 wounded when Israel launched a missile into northern Gaza City. Meanwhile, Israeli officials say they will not bow to the demands of Palestinian militants. Earlier today, they gave Israel one day to release 1,500 Palestinian prisoners, implying they'd kill an Israeli hostage otherwise. In Vienna, Western diplomats say Iran has until July 12th to abandon its nuclear ambitions. A European official says if Tehran does not accept the terms of the incentives package offered by the West, efforts to impose UN sanctions on Iran will likely resume. In Washington, the White House says North Korea's threat of a nuclear strike is hypothetical and denied plans of a pending U.S. attack. Today, North Korea said it would launch a nuclear attack if the U.S. launches a preemptive strike against a long-range missile. In Mexico, officials say a preliminary count of votes cast in the presidential election show conservative Felipe Calderon with a slight lead, but his challenger refuses to concede until all votes have been counted. In Washington, a federal judge has issued a temporary restraining order against the Navy. For this week only, certain sonar technologies cannot be used during a U.S. warfare exercise in the Pacific out of concern for marine mammals. In New Jersey, the governor and lawmakers will meet tomorrow to try to end a budget crisis. At the meeting, they're expected to discuss a proposal to raise the state sales tax to help close the deficit. When the July 1st deadline passed without agreement, the governor ordered all non-essential state services shut down. In Indonesia, authorities say a 5-year-old boy who died last month was infected with the bird flu. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The U.S. manufacturing sector grew at a slower-than-expected pace in June due to high energy and raw material prices. Some analysts see that as a sign that the economy is not overheating. U.S. construction spending fell 0.4% last month. That's despite analysts' expectations of a slight rise. Some say today's numbers are further signs that the housing market is cooling. Honda has announced expansion plans in India. By next year, the automaker plans to double its production capacity, set up a subsidiary, and invest about $650 million over a 10-year period. Chrysler will begin making the Dodge Challenger after more than 3 decades. It and the Dodge Charger, 2 so-called muscle cars, will be reintroduced to the public in 2008. The two top executives for Airbus have been fired. Some analysts say that's because of recently announced delays in the production of its super jumbo jet. BP says its oil and gas production fell 2.5% in the second quarter, down to slightly more than 4 million barrels a day. BP says a Texas refinery explosion cost more than anticipated, and Venezuela appropriated more of its output. The New York Mercantile Exchange is closed today and tomorrow for the Independence Day holiday. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 78 points, NASDAQ up 18, S&P 500 up 10. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Okay! Don't you!
South America!
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. My favorite day of the week, Monday. And 2 days of silence on my part are ended. Although I did have some producing fun over the last week, and got a little break on the weekend. So, wow, I missed you guys. I got to admit, it was nice to have some downtime, given everything that's gone on. Needed a little break. But, of course, no good deed goes unpunished. There's a lovely little, and I do mean lovely, lovely little community called Gauley Bridge, West Virginia. It's where the Gauley River meets the New River to form the Kanawha River. And there's this great, vast, broad, beautiful, glassy expanse of water, just breathtaking. And if one is not careful, and one is, coming back from visiting one's father in the hospital in Charleston, one can forget that the speed limit goes from 30 to 45. Then for about 2.5 feet, it's 55, and then it's back to 45 again. And when one does forget, one gets pulled over by a fine young officer of the Gauley Bridge Police Department, and one gets a ticket. I would be one. Brr. Guilty, 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 guilty. I'll never admit nothing, deny everything. But you know what? It's a fair bust. But, you know, I didn't need that today. But it could be worse. It could be ever so much worse. Our good friend and fellow host, Joe Vecchio, is moving to Chicago. And I read a story over at Information Clearinghouse today that makes me fret about Joe's impending visit or move. He's not visiting; he's going there to live. And you know, Joe's a veteran. I hope Joe never has need to go to the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center on the South Side, because apparently this is a creepy little place. Now, I'm not going to say anything more because I don't want to give away the rest of the story, but I hope here in the next few minutes we will hear from a gentleman by the name of Mike Ferner. We talked earlier today, and he said he was involved in some protests, real protests today, but he said he would attempt to call the program sometime like now. So I hope we will hear from him, and when we do, Lord God, Billy Bob, such a story he has to tell. I mean, Jiminy Christmas. Welcome to Bushmerica. And that's all I'm going to say. Of course, you know, web savvy people that smart people that we have listening to this program, you've probably already run over to Information Clearinghouse and found this anyway. But suffice to say, Bushmerica in Bushmerica, having a cup of coffee at the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center on Chicago's South Side, apparently now rises to a level of it's an act of political disobedience. No, I will not put two sugars in my coffee. I will put one in. I do hope we hear from Mike Ferner here in a little bit, but it's the day before, or the evening, or the afternoon before the 4th of July, before our 230th anniversary of our break with the mother country. And you know, I often wonder what were Franklin and Adams and Jefferson and the rest of the crowd doing on July the 3rd. I know I'll get emails explaining to me in great detail, but you know, because there are stories out there about the founding fathers that would make mothers against drunk drivers and drunks against mad mothers just absolutely make the blood drain from their faces collectively. I mean, these were guys who put down 2 gallons of wine a day. And it's not like the way I was raised in the basement of the Baptist church in Alabama, where the little old lady said, "Well, what Jesus turned in, they said it was wine. It was grape juice." No, sunshine. Messrs. Jefferson and Adams and that crowd were drinking the real deal. To the point that one wonders if they woke up July 4th and said, "Well, I signed what?" Yeah, this is pre-aspirin, after all. The only thing you had out there to save you was the hair of the dog that bit you. I kid. Profound men, profound words. I think we're going to have some program. You know, we don't have a program for you tomorrow. I am indeed taking the evening off so that, God willing, Agnes and I can take the munchkins over across the river. And for a little tiny town, Fayetteville puts up one heck of a fireworks show. I mean, you know, 30 solid minutes. I mean, they spend some bucks on it, and it's right there on the plateau over the New River, and the concussions from the exploding shells just about make you jump out of your skin. It's exciting. And there's a little carnival there, and pony rides, and the rangy sort of stringy people, selling food, and, you know, I'll have my official carnival corn dog. You know, not the kind that's frozen and wrapped in cornbread. No, where they dip it in the batter and dip it in the hot hot grease, and you know, you take the thing from the purveyor and you can feel your arteries hardening. So, you know, that's tomorrow. But also tomorrow, I hope we're going to have some recordings for you. Did Bruce talk about this at all? Agnes, we talked about it, and we're tentatively calling it Voices of Freedom. We'll have a reading of the Declaration of Independence, because here at the Kincaid Mansion, I read the Declaration of Independence every July 4th. Frankly, if I was a better father, I would read it every week or every month, or you know, just constantly trying to make sure that it gets embedded in the minds of our young ones. But, you know, that and some other famous speeches and some other, other things that speak to the qualities of freedom, not just in America, but the world over. We wait until January every year. And then we dutifully haul out Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. And we play a clip of it on the evening news, and hooray, yeah, great guy, and we move along. You know when the I Have a Dream speech ought to be run or played or displayed? On the 4th of July. because that is every bit as much a part of our heritage, of our long struggle, white, black, Native American, towards some concept of equality and freedom in this country. That speech is every bit as much a part of it as the Declaration of Independence itself, in my humble estimation. So we should, you know, just if you tune in at any time, you'll have a chance to hear voices of freedom, I hope. Should be plenty of time for doing that. Right now, 15 minutes after the hour, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, your phone calls, and sort of sitting around here hoping that Mike Ferner will call with his tale of terror from the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center on the south side of Chicago. And more of your phone calls, or some of your phone calls. We're just getting started. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Lee Hamilton
and Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history,
and we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens,
staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history,
and it's also our future.
Get involved.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
hot day in July. Rose hot and dusty, and a thirst is in her eyes. She looked cute with sweat on her lip and dust blown in her hair. Smiling like some neon when she's standing there. And I asked her if she was going anywhere like I was. It was on my way.
Dig it. 20 minutes past the hour. The list of grievances against dear leader. I'm sorry, King George III. How about this? This is the first thing that the authors of the Declaration of Independence complained about George III. See if it rings a bell. He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Signing statements, anyone? Yeah, I think. Tell you what, let's go straight to the phones. We are joined by our, I hope will be new friend, Mike Ferner, calling from Chicago, I assume. Mike, are you there?
Yes, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Yourself?
Okay.
For a jailbird?
No jail time yet. I'm still a free man. I'm standing out here on Clark Street.
Let's do a little time travel real quick. On July the 1st, you were at the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center on Chicago's South Side. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you're a veteran yourself, right?
Correct.
Now, you were not walking around with a poster or a sign or a sandwich board and hollering, hey, hey, ho, ho, George Bush has got to go. You weren't doing any of that, right?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I was at that facility. I'm from Toledo, Ohio.
Okay.
I was at that facility because I'm participating with a group called Voices for Creative Nonviolence, and they're walking from Springfield, Illinois to North Chicago. And I came in on that day. I'm not doing a whole walk. I just came in on that day, and I'm going to do, you know, like a week's worth of the walk. And on that day, we were walking through the south part of Chicago, and we stopped in front of the VA there, the VA Medical Center. And there was about eight of us. And we had some signs that said, end the war in Iraq. And the sign I was holding, interestingly enough, said, demand quality health care for veterans. We took turns to go into the facility and use the bathroom and so forth. And I went in and I thought, well, I'll get a cup of coffee. And I sat down to get a cup of coffee. And the VA cop came over and said that he wasn't going to let me sit there any longer because I was protesting. And all I was doing was sitting there drinking a cup of coffee.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. How's the coffee at the VA? Was it worth a protest?
Well, it was good. I'm not sure it was that good. Well, the thing is, I had my Veterans for Peace T-shirt on.
Okay.
And that's what I said, what are you talking about? I said, I'm just sitting here drinking a cup of coffee. And he said, oh, no, you can't be sitting here with that shirt on. And I said, you're kidding. I said, that's not the case. I said, you know, there have been a lot of court decisions that say that, you know, they've found to the opposite. And, you know, I'm going to sit here and drink my coffee. And he said, well, then we're going to have to arrest you.
You said, you know, creative nonviolence. Was this some subtle ploy to ensnare Officer Obie in your crafty little plot?
This one wasn't. No. I mean, sometimes we'll go and get arrested on purpose and, you know, sit down in front of a military facility, you know, a recruiting station or something like that to be, you know, to do a kind of a classic civil disobedience thing. But you know, this was completely out of the blue. You know, I went in there and we weren't breaking the law out in front of the place. We were standing on the sidewalk. Just, you know, my sign said demand quality health care for veterans. And, you know, we weren't doing anything but being on the sidewalk with our signs. And when I went in the building, I didn't even have the sign with me. So this was.
Yeah, the one that said demand quality health care for veterans.
Yeah, right. I mean, you would think the VA would be happy somebody was doing that.
Well, yeah, because I mean, they've taken a little hammer job on their, with the budget in recent years. It's a disturbing factor. Was there a law cited to you, or I mean, were you ticked? You were cuffed, obviously, at some point.
They cuffed me and took me to their security office in the medical center, and they wrote me originally me up on three charges, and they. The officer that was writing me up was a former Navy guy, which is what I was, and we were both hospital corpsmen. So we got to talking, and he said, "Well, I'll drop these two, but I got to write you up on disorderly conduct." So.
And what part of your conduct? Now, I don't want to get you to admit anything that could be used in a court of law or anything, Mike. But what part of your conduct was disorderly?
Bob, If you were watching it yourself, I don't think you'd been able to tell. I mean, I mean,
did you stir your coffee to the left?
I wanted to tell Officer Obie to go take a flying, you know what, on a rolling donut, but I bit my tongue and I just said, I think it's my right to sit here and have a cup of coffee and I'll leave as soon as I'm done. And he wasn't going to have it, so I wasn't about to back down because that's just the sort of thing that you got to stand up to, and it's. Obviously, it's getting crazier by the day in this country.
Well, this, pardon me, but this is lunacy.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, this is Soviet stuff, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a little column I sent out to some websites and about this, and I entitled it, "Has This Country Gone Completely Insane?"
Yeah, it's over at Information Clearinghouse, among other places.
Yeah, right. So it's... all of the stuff that the president's been using to scare the bejesus out of people and, get us into war in Iraq and all that stuff. And it filters down through every police department and, the cops at the VA. And if people don't start standing up to it and saying, no, you can't do this. This is my right to hold a sign outside or to drink a cup of coffee or whatever. It's just going to, what rights we have left are going to just keep falling by the wayside.
So let's be clear about something. Your shirt said Veterans for Peace.
Yeah, that's all it said. And it's got the logo of our organization, which is a military helmet with a dove inside of it. And that's it. That's all it said. Didn't say anything more than that.
No dirty words.
No. No, but I could have walked in there with a T-shirt on that said, "Show us your tits," or, "Nuke Iraq, back to the Stone Age," or any number of things.
Oh, it would have been "Hail, fellow well met."
Yeah, right. That would have been fine.
Well, what happens now? I mean, you got a court date?
Not yet. They gave me a citation, a $275 fine. And I said, "Well, what if I don't pay the fine?" And they said, "Well, we'll send you a court date." And I said, "Fine, I'll see you in court." And I have gotten, at this point, probably close to 200 responses to that column that I wrote, including, at this point, probably 8 or 10 attorneys, one from Florida that said, "If you can't find anybody in Chicago, let me know. I'll fly up there and represent you." So I'm pretty confident that I'm going to get out of this charge okay, but that's not the half of it. We're going to sue.
Well, that's the thing. You need to, I mean, get hold of the, me giving unsolicited advice, but you need to get hold of the ACLU.
Yes, we have, and they're interested.
Well, as well they should be, because, I mean, as you mentioned, it's not like there isn't a line of cases out there. I mean, the seminal case on this, if I recall correctly, is a court case regarding a guy who showed up for a hearing wearing a T-shirt that said, "F the draft."
Yes, yeah. And I can't remember the name of the case, but I think it went to the Supreme Court. It was out of California.
And it said, and then that case says, oh, that's political speech, all right, and that's protected.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I mean, it was the name of the organization on the shirt. I wasn't even saying anything.
Yeah. I mean, Louis Machine Shop Tuesday Night Bowling League.
Yeah, right. Well, Louis, I don't know. Louis has been up to some pretty suspicious stuff lately.
You know Louis.
Yeah, I know Louis.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust him out of my sight either. Well,
I think everybody else named Louis ought to come under some little... scrutiny here.
Yeah. Well, see, we make light and everything, but this is really very serious business.
Yeah.
Because if, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that people have fought, and I mean, you want to talk about, you know, their death shall not have been in vain, and all, this is that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, 4th of July, you know, I was glad you started reading the Declaration of Independence. You know, if you, if any of your listeners want to go to the Veterans for Peace website at veteransforpeace.org or to the afterdowningstreet.org website, they'll see the Declaration of Impeachment, which Veterans for Peace put out last year at this time. And all we did was take the Declaration of Independence. I think we changed two words in it, one of which was from king to president, and I forget what the other word was. And you're right. You read down there, and it's exactly what's going on here. Exactly.
Well, I've talked about, and you're not that familiar with the program or the network, but we've talked about this rush of the United States, Mike, toward what I'm referring to as the coward nation.
Yep.
If Bill Clinton was going to be the cause of all kinds of illicit sex among young people in America, and you remember when we were told all that, then certainly it has to roll downhill with George Bush as well. And I'm convinced that the man is a chicken hawk, he's a coward. And that is telling on our nation in the actions of our friend Officer Obi at the Jesse Brown Medical Center there.
Yep, absolutely. And you know what I think to me the most frightening thing is the kids, the young people that are growing up in this atmosphere, and they see the Officer Obi's, Adkins was the guy's name we're talking about here at the VA Center. We see the Officer Adkins doing their thing and being bullies and abusing their authority, and they see the official government at the state and local and federal level doing the same thing with wiretaps and stuff, and they think that's the way it is, and they grow up and they say, well, I guess that's the way it is, and it's crazy. And if people who know that that's not the way it's supposed to be don't stand up and say something, then that's going to be the reality that everybody's going to live under.
Right, because the perception is the reality. We
yeah.
learned that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, I love this portion of your piece, Mike, where you say where Officer Adkins or Obi or what flips his badge open, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean I'm reading this and I'm hearing the dragnet thing,
yeah.
and he flips
yeah.
the badge. You've got to go.
It was right out of Central Casting. I had a hard time keeping a straight face.
Did this dude have a gun?
Oh, sure, he's got a gun. Yeah, they all got guns, 9mm. And it's a wonder. I mean, and you look, you know, you and your listeners look around at your city police forces anymore. They don't look like cops anymore. They look like SWAT teams. They're dressed in black uniforms. They got the boots. I mean, it's amazing. Now, we're sliding right into this whole business and, you know, people are noticing, but you got to do more and notice. You got to stand up when you get the opportunity and say something.
Well, I tell you, I'm proud of the stand you're taking, and I hope somewhere along the way, I mean, you've got my email address there. If you want to give us the denouement to the whole thing after your hearing, we'd love to hear about about your victory.
I'll be glad to do that, and if it's okay with you, I'll call and let you know when the court date is. And any of your listeners in Chicago that want to come by, I guarantee it will be worth the price of admission.
Well, we've got listeners in Chicago, so please do that, and we'll let people know. And best of luck with your march as well.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, Mike. Pleasure meeting you. Pleasure making your acquaintance, and hope to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Mike Ferner, not yet jailbird. Guilty of hot coffee in the first degree. Oh, the humanity. We'll take a quick break and come back for more phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
He made a girl named Justice who gave You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
Was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Martin Sheen. When I was growing up in Dayton, Ohio, I had an unforgettable mentor who believed in me and encouraged me to pursue my dreams. Today, there are millions of children across this country waiting for a mentor to help them. Improving the world starts with one child. Please, become a volunteer mentor for Mentoring USA. Give children the chance to develop and flourish and share in the future that belongs to them.
And change before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. It's Monday. I'm so glad to be back. And what a fun little conversation that was with Mike Ferner. The protest by coffee. You know, this was the Center for Creative Nonviolence, a walk from Springfield, Illinois to Chicago. And they stop at a VA center, and the guy's carrying a sign that says, "Demand adequate health care for veterans." He sets the sign down. He's not pamphleteering, leafleting, nothing. And he goes in to use the restroom. He picks up a cup of coffee. He sits down, takes a load off, lets the dogs relax for a second. And Officer Obie's on him. "Ah, you've had your 15 minutes. You got to go, you protester." You know, you'd laugh, but it ain't funny. This is Bushmerica, and his conduct was deemed. There's been a memo. Officer Obie got a memo. Somewhere along the way, somebody told Officer Obie to behave this way to a veteran. If a veteran with cancer goes to the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center with a T-shirt that says, "Screw George Bush," does he not get treated? You go home, and when you can come back with a decent shirt on, we'll give you your chemo, by God. Hey! Let's go to the phones. David's calling from Maine. Thanks for waiting, David.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. You?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I was going to mention that story, but it seems you have it covered already.
Well, you know, I get the jump on things once in a while.
Right. One thing I was going to say is on Saturday they had, this is not politics related, but on Saturday on Austin City Limits, they had Ben Harper, and I don't know if you know his music or not, but
it seems like I should, but I frankly can't come up with it off the top of my head.
He's an outstanding musician. He plays a laptop Wisemore acoustic.
Oh wow!
And also electric. But the thing that about Ben is activism is real strong in his family, so he might be a good guest to have on because he has a lot of political views, and plus his music is charged like that with a lot of social conscious type of lyrics also. So keep that in mind, Ben Harper.
I just wrote it down.
And I bet you he'd do it too.
Cool.
He's that kind of guy. So I wanted to talk about a few issues at hand. The first one is obviously, not obvious, but I don't know if you heard the news about North Korea 5 hours ago, but they said if the U.S. attacks, it's nuclear wartime.
Well, they kind of have to say that, don't they, David?
And in light of that, U.S. has moved their missile-based system to a system called Bravo Plus, which obviously is not the premium channel for Bravo. It's it's something else.
You worked the humor in there, David. You almost caught me napping.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just such a stupid name, Bravo Plus.
Well, you know, I always preferred Sweat Condition Alpha.
That's a good one, too. And I also wanted to mention the Pakistan thing. I don't know if you heard that Bush sold $5 billion worth of fighter jets to Pakistan.
Oh, yeah.
Now, to me, I have a new word for the conservatives. They're no longer called conservatives. They're called logic tards. Because this is devoid of any logic. These are all weapons of mass destruction, you idiots.
Yes, they are. They drop 500-pound bombs. They drop 1,000-pound bombs. They shoot missiles and bullets. And yeah.
And they can destroy your hearing also.
Now the question is, what do you get for $5 billion when you're buying jets from the U.S.?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I imagine you still get a good bit of jet.
Some Pakistani food, like on Seinfeld or something.
Well, yeah, the Indians did the mangoes for nuclear reactors. I don't know what you get from Pakistan.
I don't know either. I just think it's quite the hypocrisy. And if I was the...
Well, see, Pakistan scares the daylights out of me, David. I mean, it goes all the way back to when he was only candidate Bush, and some smart alecky reporter quizzed him on who various world leaders were, and they said, "And who's the leader of Pakistan, Mr. Bush?" And he said, "That would be General somebody, but I know he's a general." And that's when I looked up and went, "Oh man, no, not him, because if he gets in, we're screwed, and we are, we're screwed."
I tell you, this whole Pakistan thing and everything dealing with different foreign countries, it's just such hypocrisy across the board. I don't think these guys understand how the game theory is played with terrorists. Terrorists understand the game theory.
Well, yeah.
The U.S. does not understand. They just think, oh, money. That's all they think about.
Yeah, we're going to lose a few. There'll be some collateral damage, and boy, are we going to make a ton of money.
And then we can all just go back home, back to our...
swimming pools, movie stars.
Back to our summer home with Trent Lodge on the porch.
and the hateful beast Barbara Bush sitting in the Adirondack chair, looking out. And this is your neck of the woods, looking out over the waters at Kennebunkport.
I tell you who scares me more than Pakistan right now is Israel. Israel scares me. Anytime you say Israel scares you, immediately they'll have a pundit come up and say, "What? Are you anti-Semitic?"
Well, of course.
But I just heard on the news off the wire they attacked a university with an airstrike. Oh, that's real. That has to be really.
Well, yeah, but see, that's the liberal media, David. What they didn't tell you it was Gaza terrorist unit. It was terrorist tech.
It was all filled with terrorists. And somebody caught this on Randy that I think you should be aware of it. That something kind of like the Monday dump before July 4th, real clever. But I think it's on National Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it says that Bush is the one who gave the order for the CIA agent plane.
Oh, well, I mean, didn't they admit that a few months ago, David?
I don't know the specifics on it. I just think it's...
Well, no, that's why they mounted the legal theory. I mean, that was the way I read it, at least. They mounted this legal theory that as President of the United States and unitary Lord God Almighty, George Bush unilaterally decided to declare that was no longer classified information, and by unclassifying her, he go get her. I mean that's the way it went down. If the pleadings in the Scooter Libby case are to be believed, and I have no reason to disbelieve them, but this is a terrifying time to be alive. Like I said, I grew up with some low rent Cold War fears and crazy people like Reagan saying, "Yeah, I've declared the Soviet Union to be illegal," but that's nothing compared to this. I don't know. This is like medication time scary.
Medication time. I think. What is it? I think it was interesting how Osama bin Laden came out with another bootleg tape this weekend, and he said, "We praised the lion of Zarqawi."
Yeah. Well, you know, I wish I spoke Arabic because I swear. I just know that in the uncut versions of these tapes, you know, they all start out, "Hello, Mecca!" You know.
Well, he keeps saying the same thing. This is why I'm going with the logic tards did not create Osama now. I'm beginning to think this. Because if you think about it, he's saying things like destroying America, just like he did the Russians by bankrupting them. I don't think... Too many strategists in our country are too stupid to realize that.
I keep saying it, David, and I'll continue. We are dealing with a bunch of neoconservative boobies who have never sat down with a 12-pack of beer, four good friends, and played Risk all night. Because there are lessons to be learned in that. And one of them is that some of this kind of stuff, you can't win. You simply can't win. A gentle passing glance at history, and you know you don't have to go. You know you don't have to go back to the ancient Romans. Look at the British in Iraq in 1920.
There will be no. And remember, if people have to keep reminding themselves that Bush doesn't care about his poll numbers. He doesn't care about his poll numbers.
Yeah,
they're still there.
Yeah, I'm here.
And. He wants to be like Churchill. He said it many times already.
Well, and people have said it for him. And, oh, you know, he's so like Truman because Truman had terrible poll numbers, but he's one of our greatest presidents now. But see, Truman wasn't an idiot.
This is nothing like Churchill. I don't know if you heard the news about how now the military covered up. That girl, 20 years old, there's a rape victim, the case that they're investigating right now.
Yeah.
She's not 20 years old. She's 15.
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, they raped her and burned the body, didn't they?
Right.
And she was afraid of them beforehand because apparently they were saying saying things to her and leering at her and, you know, "Hey, Hodge girl."
But that doesn't happen. See, according to Hannityville, a town crier comes out and yells out, "Liberal media! Liberal media!"
Oh, yeah, because only a liberal would say something. No, see, at this point in time, with all of these things happening in the Marine Corps, I think it's time for General Peter Pace of the Marine Corps to step down as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Because, you know, the Marine Corps is all about personal responsibility. You know what? Those are his men.
I agree with you there, but I think it has to. You have to deal with it at the root of it, and you have to deal with the truth. And if you don't deal with the truth, it's going to keep coming back to you. And it doesn't matter because the media that people have now, I don't think this country gets it. They don't understand, Bob. The technology and the media that we have now, you can't stop the truth around the world. If it gets silenced in America, it doesn't really matter. It's going to go to the Muslims.
Yeah, well, the American people, we have a passing, you know, there's a lot of us that are absolutely taken with the truth. Pursue it, chase it, try to sort it out. But no, you're right. I mean, it'll pass the mainstream by, but it's gonna come to, you know, it lands in the UK, it lands in France, it lands in Germany, it lands on Al Jazeera and Al Arabiya. And the fact that we're over here ignorant as the day is long doesn't make it any less truth.
So for someone to think from the conservative side or an opposing view, to think that, hello.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, yeah. It faded out a little bit. But anyways, for an opposing side to think that is the problem there is that everything, it's not concrete. It's not based in reality. And the problem is the bubble that they're trying to contain, there is no real bubble. They need to get over that, and they need to stop saying liberal media because you're just wasting time. And if you want to protect an image, you're not protecting an image.
Oh no, there's nothing left to protect here, David. This is a broken military. The Marine Corps is shattered into a million pieces. The army is reeling. I guess maybe the Air Force and the Navy are in slightly better shape because, you know, there's a little bit less involvement there, but not a lot less. At some point in time, you know, somebody in the political leadership is going to figure out that they're going to lose their hide for not strongly demanding an end to this war.
And that's when the next attack comes, Bob, when everything is broken down.
Yeah.
And everyone just sits around and says, how could this happen? How could this happen? The ignorant Americans.
And frankly, ugly freaks like... Well, we're not even going to say names, but those right-wing talkers, you've mentioned one. I can think of a couple of others. They will be out there the minute after something bad happens. This is Clinton's fault.
Did you see what they said on the blog? They said, I wonder if we can publish the New York Times children's schools addresses.
Yeah, I did run across that, and I didn't want to... Yeah, I ran across it, and it's sickening.
It is sickening. And then the fact that they were trying to... I can't believe this is going out, but the fact they're trying to say... Look at the New York Times. Now they're showing pictures of Rumsfeld's house. I don't know if you came across that.
No, I didn't. I did come across a picture of Rumsfeld sitting next to a picture of one of the aliens from Mars Attacks.
I didn't see that one.
Separated at birth. Honest to God, I kid you not.
I tell you, Bob.
Somebody, you know, will somebody please play some Slim Whitman for Donald Rumsfeld? Because we all know what happens
it's
to the aliens.
Illusion. These people aren't really in power. No one is really in power. It's all just unleashing hate and negative energy. There really is no power in this. It's just a waste of money is what it is.
Yeah, well, it's become self-sustaining.
When they get that money, when they get the stacks of money from this war, there is going to be no applause. And then it's going to seep in through their head and be like, maybe I did do something wrong. Then it's finally going to happen.
By then they'll be dead. I mean, we're talking about old, hateful people here, David. They're not, you know, they realize their days are numbered. The only way they can measure value in their life is by the size of their bank account or the number of people they've killed or the number of people that they've maimed or wounded or left orphaned.
Well,
that's always, their only measure now.
Well, always remember, people lash out because of what their subconscious is telling them. That's why all these people are angry on the right, because they know deep down inside what they are doing is corruptive to every element of our society, and they can't stand it, Bob. They just can't stand it, so they have to attack because it makes them feel better, but only for a little bit, just like heroin. Only for a little bit, then they nod off.
Yeah, well, and sooner or later you got to do it again.
Right.
You know, hence Iran, hence North Korea. You know, you started out this conversation with Pakistan. That place is a heartbeat away. You know, the minute that Pervez Musharraf drops dead, that country is going to become an absolute terror nightmare. They got nukes that, you know, that we know about. They got nukes we don't know about, and they got some really, really cool delivery mechanisms that we sold them.
And some people think that's where the 9/11, all of the 9/11 inside job originated from. Elements of Pakistan, which I wouldn't doubt.
Well, they have a very effective secret police.
And you know, just to wrap this up, this also reminds me that Doc in Back to the Future, he bought some uranium from the Pakistanis.
Back to the Future.
Yep. For his DeLorean, you know?
Exactly. David, thanks so much. It's always so good to hear from you.
No problem, Bob. You have a good night and a wonderful holiday.
All right, going to try to. You as well.
Later.
Bye now. Now, you know, you can't get much better in the way of a call than that. We've been through Pakistan, Israel, all the way back to Pakistan, and wrapped it up with a Back to the Future quote. That's quality conversation radio. That's what I'm talking about when well-rounded, and when I say that it's as important what the callers bring as anything that I do, that's kind of what I got in mind. So we're coming up on the top of the hour, and necessarily we have to take a break. I got a chunk of the Charleston newspaper that I left out in the car that I want to share with you. Just because there's a couple of really, and of course, you know, running back and forth to the hospital, I have been exposed to a great deal of right-wing radio, and I have another report for you today. What the right-wing Congress, or the fright-wing, as I saw it referred to earlier today, what the fright-wing Congress is now saying about why they screwed up and how they screwed up and why it's all okay. So all of that's coming up. This is the Head On Radio Network. Me? I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Tomorrow's scheduled launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery is in jeopardy. A crack was found this morning in the foam insulation on the external fuel tank. Mission managers are now deciding whether to delay the launch. It was scrubbed twice over the weekend because of poor weather. In Spain, at least 34 people have been killed and dozens injured in a subway derailment in Valencia. Officials say the crash was not sabotage. The train was moving too fast when a wheel cracked. A former U.S. soldier has been charged with the rape and murder of an Iraqi teenager and killing three members of her family. Because he's already been discharged from the Army, he could be tried either in a civilian court or by the military. Several other soldiers may also be charged in connection with that March incident. In Iraq, two American servicemen, a soldier and a Marine, have been killed in the Anbar province. Also, a car bomb exploded in a market in Mosul today, killing at least seven people and wounding 22. Israel says it will not negotiate with Palestinian militants holding a kidnapped Israeli soldier. Those militants issued an ultimatum earlier today for Israel to release its Palestinian prisoners. Israel's offensive on the Gaza Strip continues. Western diplomats said today Iran has until July 12th to abandon its nuclear enrichment program. The diplomats said they'll renew efforts to impose UN sanctions on Iran. Both candidates claim victory in Mexico's presidential election, but officials say the race is so close results won't be known until a recount later this week. The two candidates are separated by fewer than 300,000 votes. 30 million were cast. The U.S. announced today it will give the Afghanistan National Army $2 billion worth of new military weapons. The gift is designed to modernize the Afghani fighters contending with a resurgence in Taliban resistance. In Washington, the Pentagon has notified Congress it plans to sell $5 billion worth of weapons to Pakistan. Officials say the weapons...
Okay. And let's go straight back to the phones. Our good friend Luke, calling from Knoxville, Tennessee, is joining us. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I see we're going to do some palavering, you say?
Yeah.
Well, I got one to add to your list of speeches and things to read.
Okay.
JFK's inauguration.
Oh, yeah. How could you miss that?
I mean, that's one of the things, for young people, that's the first thing, one of the things they ought to hear just so that you realize what you can do. You know, don't set any limits because there's nothing you can't do if you put your mind to it.
Yeah, as opposed to, we've just been attacked by terrorists, please go shopping.
Yeah.
God, you know.
It's like we do the hard things, as he says, because, not because they're easy, but because they are hard.
Right.
You know? If they're easy, anybody could do them.
Well, there's this country right now. I don't know. I hope there's a sea change. You know, I'm seeing. I don't know, Luke. I'm seeing signs that there are, and I'm seeing signs that there aren't. I mentioned before we went into the break. I heard a Kentucky Republican congressman talking to the guy who was having the time of his life filling in for Flush today, and he said, "You got to understand." If the liberal Democrats had been in control the last 4 years, why, our budget deficit would be twice as high.
How? Tell me how. How we could be burning the money we couldn't spend any faster.
Right, you know, and at that point, I'm just trying to keep the car on the road.
I mean, you know, they want to call us tax and spend, that's fine. They're borrowing spend. At least we pay our bills as we go.
Yeah. So, you know, because we would have attacked Iraq and Mongolia. Yeah, there.
No, Iceland. You have to pick someplace totally, you're totally off. Yeah, Iceland.
Iceland, right? Yeah. And, we couldn't lick Iceland at this point.
Oh, I tell you. It's one of those. Talking about that, I was watching earlier tonight on CNN, and they were interviewing, a taped interview with Cy Hirsch, and he's got a new one out in the New Yorker, where apparently the Bush people haven't come up with anything imaginative, so essentially they're going to do the same thing now for Iran, it sounds like.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that, Luke, and yeah, it looks like Seymour Hersh has his ear to the ground again.
Well, essentially, like you said, they're essentially going to do what they did before. Say, well, we've made our try. Of course, our try said you have to give up everything before we'll even talk to you. And you know, then they say, well, we've already made our attempt. So then, of course, they can say, yeah, well, we tried, and they refused everything.
Well, you know, I've got a piece of sound here, and I'll run it a little bit, Luke. I guess I'm a little bit late getting to it because this came out, Wednesday or so. The inadvertent wasn't supposed to be played part of a conversation between Condi and Sergei Lugov. I can't say
that. I've heard him play it, and I was like, I'll never say that name ever again.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, not on the fly. But I'll run that in a little bit because, you know, when you hear this, you begin to understand why everything is as screwed up as it is. Because, you know, once again, I'll remind folks that Condoleezza Rice is a hell of a piano player, and she was apparently a Magna Cum Listerine or something scholar in Russian studies. And I'm all for studying the Russians. But the thing is, she's a buggy whip at this point. She's irrelevant. She's obsolete. She has no use. You know, you can't. Russian studies are no help to you. And being a scholar of the Russian mind and being able to read Tolstoy in the original is of no use whatsoever.
If you don't know how to use it.
Well, no. But if you're dealing with crazed Pakistanis.
Well, the thing gets me is about her is. It's like, say, they give her everything. Oh, yeah, she's a great person. It's like, she was the worst national security advisor there was.
In the history of the job, sure.
I mean, it's like, say, I still want sometime them to play that tape with her saying no one could have had anything and then play the tape of her in Milan 6 months earlier where, oh, by the way, we're keeping the president on the aircraft carrier because there's been rumors people are going to fly planes into buildings.
Yeah, use planes as missiles. Wasn't that the exact phrase?
I want to see that tape play first, the one where no one could have imagined they'd ever fly planes into it, and then play that one right behind.
Well, you know, you'd really kind of like to see that done at her war crimes trial, but it'll have to remain on the wish list, I'm afraid.
I know. Well, you know what I mean. She's one of these people. Every time, oh God, I tell you what. One person in the media, admittedly, I want rid of Flush, but I tell you what, the person who right now just absolutely boils me worse than anybody is Chris Matthews. I mean, dear God, I saw the thing over, there's a thing over at Crooks and Liars today. I was looking through just to spend a little time, and there's a tape over there, something with him and, Craig Crawford and Pelosi's daughter. I can't, you know, the one that does the filmmaker.
Right.
And they were talking about something, and he's like, we were harder on George Bush than anybody, you know, compared to Gore or Kerry. And he's saying that, and I'm like, oh, God, please can't this be two-way. Please, just for 5 minutes. You know, it's like, oh, let's see. They should really play some of his things after 9/11, where he essentially was getting down just essentially say, you know, I'll kill for him, you know. I mean, he essentially was just like saying, I pledge allegiance to Bush.
Well, yeah, it's been it's been a love. Chris Matthews wanted the job of press secretary under Clinton or something, and he's still working that vendetta out.
He's never going to work that one out. I tell you what, every time you turn his weekend show on CNBC, I get it when I wake up, you know, hearing and the repeat thing in the morning. Just about that time, every time you turn on, it's like you turn on and wait to see within the first minute how many times he can say Hillary Rodham Clinton's name. I mean, he is obsessed.
Oh, I know. But, you know, beyond that, the article from James Carville, and I forget who the other writer is, where they have declared, we don't know if she will run, but Hillary Clinton can win in 08.
I don't even go there anymore. I really don't. It's like, say, right now.
Like, it's almost like a pornographic fascination.
I know. I tell you what. Like I say, my favorite, if I have to pick who I want to run in 08, I'll be honest, it's Gore and Edwards. I think that would be a fun little team. But that's just me. You know what I mean? Each to their own.
Well, there's people, you know, there's people. I like Gore. I think he's done the time in the wilderness thing. He's matured. Maybe he's figured out what it means now.
It's like saying, maybe he's figured out the word that when anybody says the word consultant, you turn around and walk the other way.
Yeah, but I mean, there's people. He's a little too centrist for me, but I've heard him speak, and he says some of the things I like to hear, and working people matter to him. Mark Warner.
But, you know, the thing on some of that is, up your way especially, how's this thing going with Webb and Allen? That looks like that's going to be fun too.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. It's going to be a blast. You know, it's only going to get weirder as November draws closer, Luke. It's like what Hunter S. Thompson used to say. You know, the hogs are in the tunnel and they're traveling on a road of bones.
But, you know, it's one of those things. I'm just sitting there because I'm hoping Webb wins because that frees Allen to go run for president. And that's going to be fun watching him and McCain go at each other.
Well, him and McCain and Frist.
Hey.
And maybe Newt. Maybe Newt.
Well, you know, you always used to say that, you know, some people have people that haunt them. Like I say, with Frist, don't worry. I have two simple words that will hang around his neck like the anchor.
Terry Schiavo?
Michael Schiavo.
Well, okay. Yeah.
I mean, Jerry's...
Because videotape is one word.
But like I say, Michael Schiavo will follow him. You know what I mean? He will hound Frist, I have a feeling, if Frist runs for president. You know, anywhere Frist shows up, he won't be far behind. Or maybe they're ahead of him.
Well, I hope you're right. You know, but then again, I want him to duke it out real good. I mean, I don't want a Republican coronation. I want him out there fighting real nasty, like, so that they can't heal after their primary process.
Well, like I say that's why I'm thinking Allen and McCain will be a fun one-on-one. You know what I mean? Because then I'm just sitting there praying. It's like, please, there at the end, just let the boys from New York show up. You know, I'm just waiting for Pataki and...
Oh, don't forget Mitt Romney and his sacred underwear.
Oh, God. I tell you. He's one of them ones that's like, sometimes you're just like saying, go over, sit in the corner. We'll call you when the halo shows up, you know?
He is. He's nuts. He's certifiably insane. Luke, thanks so much. We got to hit the break.
All right, buddy. Have a good week. A good holiday tomorrow.
You too. You too. Bye now. All right, quick break, and then we'll come back to your phone calls and a few stories, fun stuff. Yeah, I really did. I heard it on right-wing talk radio today. If the Democrats had been in control, the deficit would have been twice as high. I want to know where that man's liquor store is. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Mother, my baby and I are healthy and happy, but I was shocked to learn that every minute a woman somewhere in the world dies in pregnancy or childbirth. When women can't plan when to get pregnant, or even how many children to have, it puts them and their babies at risk. We can lower these risks for just pennies a day. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. If you are too, call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121. 1-800-224-3121. For the cost of the pennies we see lying on our sidewalks, we can make a real difference. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
We often hear claims Muslims don't condemn terrorism.
And that Islam condones violence.
As Muslims, we want to state clearly
that those who commit acts of terror in the name of Islam are betraying the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad.
We reject anyone of any faith who commits such brutal acts.
And will not allow our faith to be hijacked by criminals.
Islam is not about hatred and violence. It's about peace and justice.
I really needed a computer to help me get back on my feet. I found a local organization that refurbishes donated PCs, and I got a great deal. I'm so glad someone passed it on.
Donating computers gives more people access to technology while protecting our environment. So take that computer and pass it on. To learn more, go to epa.gov/pass it on. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dale, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Let's go back to the Declaration of Independence for just a minute. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained, and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature. Right, inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only? Texas redistricting anyone? Let's see. He is affected to render the military independent of and superior to civil power. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislature. National Guard, Mexican border. Yeah. For depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury. For transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. Jesus, it hasn't changed. This is amazing. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Katrina, Katrina. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. Ah, Tom, Ben, John, Jimmy, Aaron, Alex. Where are you? Where are your descendants? Where are they? Are we them? This is not my mad little moment of ego, but are we them? Is this where we find the American spirit again? A spirit of freedom? A spirit of hope? Because you can't find it. Freedom and hope are dead at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, replaced by nothing short of hatred, greed, and fear. Hatred, greed, and fear rule the day at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But we haven't given up here. We're not giving up. Have you ever seen that poster, The Last Great Act of Defiance, with the little mouse and the eagle screaming down with talons clutching and mouse standing up there shooting the bird at the bird? Or the one where the frog's going down the stork's throat and hanging, and he's got his arms still sticking out, and he's grabbing the stork for all it's worth. Never give in. The list of offenses committed by George III is almost identical to the offenses committed by George the 43rd. Too many similarities. Too many. Let's go to the phones. Jim is joining us from an undisclosed location. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. You?
All right. You know, since you're excerpting some speeches, there's one that I would like to hear read tomorrow. I don't know if it will, but if no, I'd like to just read two paragraphs of it tonight. It's very short.
Go ahead.
And this is relating to the use of American military power.
Mm-hmm.
That strength will never be used in pursuit of aggressive ambitions. It will always be used in the pursuit of peace. It will never be used to promote provocations. It will always be used to promote the peaceful settlement of disputes. We in this country, in this generation, are by destiny, rather than a choice, the watchmen on the walls of world freedom. We ask, therefore, that we may be worthy of our power and responsibility, that we may exercise our strength with wisdom and restraint, and that we may achieve in our time and for all time the ancient vision of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. That must always be our goal, and the righteousness of our cause must always underlie our strength. For as it is written, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes but in vain.
You know, Jim, it's difficult for me to hear the words of John Kennedy.
Remarks prepared for delivery at the Dallas Trademark Luncheon, undelivered, November 22nd, 1963. That speech was in his pocket when they pulled him on the autopsy table.
And how, you know, he never got to say those words.
No.
And he never got to enunciate that vision. He did in other speeches, but... Those particular words never made it out.
Not like that. Not with those strengths. Not with that power.
No. And you know, Vietnam went on to be exactly what he was inveighing against in that speech.
Exactly, because he knew where that was going, and you know, he had already pulled us out of Laos, and you know, the generals were mad about that. And I'm not trying to be Oliver Stone here.
No, I understand.
But I'm simply looking back at history, and this is from the Let the Word Go Forth, and this edited by Ted Sorensen, who helped Kennedy write in all of his speeches. But this one was his last and undelivered speech. And when you compare what we had in the White House then to what we have in the White House now, it is extremely frightening to me.
Well, it's frightening. It's depressing. In the course of pulling up documents that might go into our little loop for tomorrow, Jim, I found the text of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, because of course Gettysburg was fought in advance of the Independence Day holiday in 1863. And you know, it's said that I don't even remember who it was that yammered in front of Lincoln at Gettysburg, but that guy spoke for 2 hours.
The one who went before him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Lincoln stood up and spoke for 2 minutes.
Well, you know, Lincoln was a strange man in a way, and he had his share of problems, as did a number of our presidents, like Roosevelt and other men, but he managed to overcome them. And I can remember when he was writing the Emancipation Proclamation, he put it before his cabinet, and Seward said, "We can't do this now." And this was like in 1862.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "We can't do this now. We're going to have a battle of some type. because the South was pretty much on its way to being recognized in 1862. They were fighting some very, very winning battles, and you know, they had some extremely good military leaders. And Lincoln said, okay, I'll wait on this. Well, one was coming up around Bend, and it was called Antietam at Sharpsburg on September 17, 1862.
I'm well familiar.
And we lost. Do you know how many men we lost in that battle that day?
God, it was over 100,000, wasn't it?
No, it was 25,300.
Okay, then the dead and wounded was a six-digit number.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
25,000, nearly 25,300, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and it was the first...
It was in a 12-hour period. I mean, the bloody carnage, I mean, good God in heaven, if you can imagine it back then. And then Clara Barton was there.
Right.
She was using corn husk to wrap what was left of these mangled bodies on that battlefield.
Oh, yeah. I've walked all over it because I'm a little bit of a Civil War buff. It was also the first battle that came home because Matthew Brady arrived within days.
Right.
And shot the carnage of the Bloody Lane and the cornfield and the bridge, the Dunker Church. And for the first time, the American people saw...
There or something like that, too.
Yeah.
There, a sunken road.
Yeah, the sunken road. And the American people, especially in New York City, saw it for the first time. And didn't that contribute to the draft riots?
I think it did. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that Lincoln was trying to put forth the Emancipation Proclamation is because of what they call copperheads, so the people who supported, who did support George McClellan.
Mm-hmm. In 1864.
The North just had no real stomach for that war. And a lot of people in the North didn't, particularly in larger cities and things. And, of course, then you could have somebody go for you if you pay $300 and stuff like that.
Right.
Always a rich man's war, a poor man's fight. You know that.
Well, exactly. But I went on and I read the text of the Gettysburg Address, and I don't mean to sully Lincoln's memory, but in many ways that address, those words that he said so eloquently are what... someone mentioned earlier that they keep trying to recast Bush as Harry Truman or FDR. You know,
no way they could do that.
But they try.
Lincoln used to go to the telegraph office over the War Department every day, and he used to sit there. And, of course, the man was slightly manic depressive. Of course, being married to Mary Todd would make anybody that way, practically, because he was just nuts. But he would sit there and ponder, you know, the responsibility that he personally felt for the blood and carnage, because he hated that. I mean, you know, you look at these Civil War battlefields like in the aftermath, photoshopped by Brady.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, if you look even at the animals, the beautiful horses and the drummer boys, grown men, and the damage that these weapons then could do to a human body.
You know what amazes me, though, Jim?
And, you know, anybody who does not have a respect for war, which George Bush obviously does not.
143 years after Matthew Brady published his photographs of the Antietam or Sharpsburg battlefield, the American people see less of the horrors and outcomes of this Iraq war than they did of the Civil War.
Of course.
And that should cause us to sort of take a step back.
Well, I mean, you're not going to see any shots of anything coming into Dover, Delaware. Okay?
No. Well, we don't see shots of anything going on in Al-Anbar province.
No. Or no, oh, no, you're definitely not going to see that. And you're not going to see the shots of...
And frankly, I feel like, Jim, if the American people are going to finance a war like that, they damned well ought to have to look at the consequences of it.
Well, I think that goes for any war period in which you fight. Because, I mean, before you go to war, you damn well better have a good excuse to go. And you best be the person who has to go because you've been the one who's been attacked and you're defending yourself. But in this case, there's no justification for the current action in Iraq. I mean, there's just no justification that I can find. I mean, you know, it's talking about the elimination of Saddam. Now they're trying to get Saddam's wife and his daughter and this, that, and the other because of these insurgencies and stuff like that. But, I mean, this is just a bad war from start to finish, and there's no justification that I can find for it. I mean, I can find justification for, you know, upholding military rules and things of this nature. We've talked about that. But as far as the whole situation that has caused such a question among a lot of men in the uniform, why should I have to go over and be subjected to this, and for what reason, and the morality of this war, I don't blame these guys. I blame the son of a bitch that put them in the position for them to have to be there. And that's what this man is a no-good bastard son of a bitch.
In spades. In spades, Jim. Now,
you know, let's not keep it at the LT level. Let's just take it straight to where it belongs. I mean, you know, you don't need to...
It rolls downhill.
Well, and that's the thing. Now, here we have one commander-in-chief that I just quoted who realized that, you know, this war, that our military power should never be abused, and that is inherent, that we should never abuse our military and ask them to fight where they should not have to fight.
Well, look, our new friend Mike Ferner got arrested in a VA hospital for nothing more than a T-shirt that said Veterans for Peace.
Well, that ought to tell you something right there, because these people are so, you know, when people are doing something wrong, they become extremely defensive and, you know, overly defensive. And when there's something inherently wicked about any cause of this type, then you're going to have that type of activity. If there's a certain element of righteousness and sense of, you know, of rightness about a cause, you're not going to have that problem. You didn't see things like that happen during World War II. I mean, we were attacked in that war. We had to defend ourselves. I mean, we were fighting real sources of aggression and tyranny.
Real armies. Real navies. Real air forces. Yeah.
But, you know, unfortunately, we have always had a problem. Now, I was watching a thing last night about the defenders of Wake Island. I mean, these guys fought the Japanese Navy like you wouldn't believe. The first time the Japs had tried to take Wake Island, and I'm not trying to get too far afield from what we're talking about here, but I'll try to make my point quickly. But anyway, they sunk with 400 and something Marines and 1,100 civilians. They took on the whole Japanese Navy. And Husband Kimmel, who was in charge of Pearl Harbor, had sent a relief force to take Wake back, or at least to relieve these men and get them off there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the new commander took over, and when they realized that the Japs had come back with a vengeance, the new commander in Pearl said, no, we're going to withdraw the thing, and these guys were taken off the island, and 98 civilians were murdered right there on the shores. I mean, you know, the fact that we left those guys like that there as expendable cannon fodder is horrible. And they had five survivors from Wake Island who managed to, they were taken prisoner by the Japanese, and they were placed in the holds of ships. And one man had managed to escape by going all the way through China. And the last person, when he finally got into the friendly Chinese forces, was commanded by none other, the guy he encountered was Mao Zedong. And he had his picture with him.
My gracious.
I couldn't believe it. I saw this on TV last night on the History Channel.
It's amazing.
And I thought to myself, you know, when you ask people to go and fight like that, you have no right to leave them in the lurch. You have no right to just use them as expendable cannon fodder. I mean, they've given you the... or prepared to give you the last full measure of their devotion, and, you know, we should be prepared to do no less than the same. But if you have any sense to begin with, you're not going to get yourself in that situation where you have to use human beings and human material like that wasted.
I think you're right. Jim, thank you very much.
All right.
Have a good evening.
Happy 4th of July to you and your family and all your people.
And you as well.
Thank you.
Bye now. 22 before the hour. I was so engrossed in that. I love history. Sort of ran over the bottom break, but we'll take it now. You want to get involved? 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The AFL-CIO is leading a protest today against high gasoline prices at the White House. Joss Williams, president of the Washington, D.C. area, AFL-CIO, says working families are being hit hard by the high prices as oil companies gouge record profits.
What we are saying to the Bush administration is that those people who put them in office, big oil barons, their days should come to an end. And this administration should be about people, not about profit.
Williams says that higher crude prices alone do not account for the increased oil company profits, and he would like to see the Bush administration end tax incentives for big oil.
The battle over a federal minimum wage increase may not be over as Democrats in the Senate have drawn a line in the sand. Led by Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, the Democrats are vowing to block an approved congressional pay hike scheduled for January 1st unless the Republican majority agrees to an increase in the minimum wage for the country's lowest paid workers. The minimum wage has not increased in nearly a decade, while in that time, congressional salaries have blossomed by more than $30,000. The congressional salary is currently $165,200 annually, with an increase of $3,300 scheduled for January 1st. A person working full-time at minimum wage earns $10,712 per year. At $5.15 per hour, the average minimum wage earner would have to work nonstop for more than 3 years to match the congressional salary. Only 21 states have a wage higher than the federal minimum.
It's official. Oregon has a brand new Working Families Party. Barbara Dudley is a Working Families Party organizer.
We're going to be focusing on family wage jobs, on getting living wages paid for all kinds of work in this country, for things like universal and affordable health care, for adequate funding for public education. We want to get public education all through higher education accessible to working class kids again.
Dudley says the party will be active in the November elections and will hold a founding convention this summer.
The FBI says a laptop containing the personal information of nearly 26.5 million veterans has been recovered and there is no evidence of tampering. The Bureau has not said how the laptop was recovered or if any arrests have been made.
Here's today's economic report. According to the Economic Policy Institute, U.S. economic productivity is up 14.7% and profits are way up. But for working families, wages and incomes are actually down below where they were at the start of the recovery in 2001. EPI says wage growth has been shortchanged because 46% of the total corporate income growth has been distributed as corporate profits. As a result, real median household income has fallen 5 years in a row. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
16 and a half minutes before the hour. We're more than halfway done with this Monday night. Thank God it's Monday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and straight to the phones, a good friend of ours that we haven't heard from in quite some time, our friend Sue calling from the UK. Sue, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Happy Independence Day.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I think you need another one, though.
I think we do.
Yeah. I'm okay, just, you know, baffling along, really. It's been a long time.
It has been. We fret. We worry about our friends if we don't hear from them from time to time.
Yeah, well, you know, going through a lot of ups and downs, as yourself has. And, we're just listening to you and Jim, you know, talking. And I thought, well, get on the phone, Sue. Happy 4th of July.
I'm so glad you did. I'm so very glad you did. You know, you talk about ups and downs and things. This is it's a difficult world to live in right now.
Well, we've just lost another two soldiers in Afghanistan.
I know.
I mean, let's face it, most of the organic matter in that country is British. From, you know, the amount of people from this country that have died in Afghanistan over the years, you know, over when we had the empire and all that.
All the way back to the 1820s, 1840s.
It's a place of death for our country. It always has been. And, you know, they're out there. They haven't got enough men. They haven't got the right equipment.
And even your government is admitting in the last day or so that it doesn't have the right equipment.
I mean, we got that's five now that we've lost in Afghanistan alone, and it's going to get worse.
And, well, I fear you're right.
Because it's funny. I was reading. I subscribe to what I call Stone Mail from Channel 4, my favorite journalist, Jon Snow.
Mm-hmm.
And he sends out an email every day from the, you know, saying what they're going to cover in the news and his opinion on it. And he was saying about Afghanistan. He said, no one's ever done Afghanistan. He said, it's a totally different place.
Well, that's true, Sue, and that goes all the way back to the days of Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
You know, he made a pass through and then got out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. It's never been a settled country in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, it's another endless thing. And, I'm fed up with a lot of it, you know, the government and this, that, and the other. And
well, is there a recognition, or do you hear it or see it, Sue, in your country? Is there a recognition that this has got to end?
Well, yes. I mean, there's regular protests there's events take place all over the country practically all the time. We've got a pretty organized force in the Stop the War Coalition. And, but I think the whole country at the moment is just waiting for some cataclysmic type thing to go wrong, to be quite honest. I think everybody's just sitting and waiting for something.
Some sort of terrible slaughter or...
Yeah, something really bad's going to happen. It's just got that feel about it.
You can sense it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the country's pretty depressed at the moment because apparently they got knocked out in the World Cup.
Right.
I mean, I only found out today. I went on to the news, Google News,
mm-hmm.
and looked, and Beckham's resigned, and the whole country's gone into a depression. I just wondered why all the, you know, our redneck types had stopped going around with their little England flags on their car, tooting their horns every 5 minutes. And it had gone terribly quiet. So I thought, well, I'd better go on and check. And they got done by Portugal.
Oh.
Shame. I'm Welsh, you see. I've got no allegiance at all to England.
I understand.
I mean, my children are half English. So, you know, they're a bit torn, their loyalties. But I have no compunction at all. I have no compunction at all.
Still, Sue, still waters run deep.
Well, yeah, you know, because people say, oh, you can be so evil. And I say, well, you have to measure how bad someone can be by how nice they can be.
Well, that's the absolute truth.
That's the way it goes, you know, and sometimes you're better off having people that are sort of middle of the road, you know, not too nice and not too nasty, because then they just sort of stay where they are.
And you at least kind of know who you're dealing with.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been having battles with my neighbour next door, and I had to get the police out. And I know now why we're not allowed guns in this country, because I've been shot him by now.
Oh, mercy, Sue.
No, he threw a slate, a roof slate, at my dog. And I mean, it was over a foot long. And he's hanging over the fence, and he's going to do this, and he's going to do that. And I'm there 5'4" and saying, come on, then. And in the end, I just talked him down. I just told him to grow up.
Atta girl.
But, you know, childish behavior. I can't be doing with it anymore. I'm too old for all that.
Life is too short. If you live to be 300, life is too short for that kind of foolishness.
Well, this is it. You know, I haven't got time to waste on. I mean, we're in the middle of a drought here, and, you know, my garden's... you haven't got your garden this year.
No, I don't, and, it, you know, it's telling on me. I don't have that outlet.
Gardening is the most wonderful thing for you. I mean, it's... You get...
Oh, to go out and gravel up some potatoes, or to pick green beans and have a big mess of green beans simmering on the pot on the stove. This time, there's nothing like that.
Because I actually tuned in the first night you were back at your secret location in West Virginia, and after your sojourn down in Alabama,
right,
and. It was lovely to hear you back.
Well, I'm happy to be back here. Home is where the heart is, and Agnes is thrilled to death to have me back. God knows why. It's wonderful to be back in the right place.
Well, you know what it is with men, don't you, Bob?
What's that?
You become a habit to us.
Okay. Yeah, Agnes is sitting here nodding and laughing.
When you're not there, you see. It's only when something goes away that you miss it. You know, nobody appreciates the water till the well runs dry.
Well, that's true. I suspect that's true, although I won't presume to speak for Agnes.
That's true.
Well, speaking of someone that's in the middle of a bloody drought, I can tell you it's true. You do miss the water.
Sue, thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening, and don't be such a stranger, okay?
I'm never a stranger, Bob, never a stranger. I'll always get back on in the end, and I'd just like to wish all the listeners over there, you know, happy 4th of July.
Well, thank you very much, and I don't know that it's proper to reciprocate happy 4th to a Welsh woman, but...
Well, you know, it was a happy day for me. I'm not English.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, the Welsh wanted a revolution, so fair play to everybody that has one, I say. I think we could all do with a couple now.
That would... So, go right ahead. Thank you.
There you go.
All right, Sue, you have a wonderful day.
Soon, Bob.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Sue. Missed her. It may sound crazy, but we think of this as a little community we're building, and family and friends, and we may never meet, but it doesn't change the esteem in which we hold the folks who share their time with us for this program. There's none more special. I wanted to share something with you in the vein of In the vein of what Sue brought up, our good friend Eugene Feinerman writes for, occasionally, thestreet.com. And he is a satirist and a profoundly knowledgeable man of history. And he gave his take on Independence Day. And, you know, he's as American as you and me, middle American, you know, heartlander. And he gave his take on Independence Day, and I just wanted to share a few words from it along with you. George III, he writes, spoke English and was faithful to his wife. That drove America to revolution. The American colonists had been spoiled by the first two Georges. They were a father and son team of German princelings who had inherited the throne of England after Queen Anne drank herself to death. Those two Georges were content to babble in German, occupy themselves with remarkably ugly mistresses, and let the empire alone. Unfortunately, even in the dimmest of royal families, after 46 years of ruling a country, someone was bound to learn the native language. Worse still, the third George's marital fidelity left him extra time to run the kingdom. He was the type of man who confused conscientiousness with actual ability. A more assertive parliament might have diverted George's energies to curing scrofula. The Whigs regarded the monarchy as a nuisance and, when in power, limited the king's responsibilities to being a Protestant. At the time of George's succession, however, the Tories dominated the House of Commons. These country squires liked the idea of a domineering, swaggering monarch because they could identify with it. Assured of a servile parliament, the king turned his attention... Servile parliament, servile Congress, wow. Assured of a servile parliament, the king turned his attention to the empire to see what he could improve, and he discovered America. Of course, it was a pleasure having those colonies, if only to spite France and Spain, but America simply was costing Britain too much money. The British government did not want to get rich off America, it had India for that, but the crown believed the colonists should pay more taxes. Americans suddenly were confronted with new taxes, more officials to collect the taxes, and more British soldiers to protect the officials, which in turn required more taxes to pay for the soldiers. Confusing bureaucracy with tyranny, the Americans protested against the usurpation of their rights as Englishmen. The king, however, did not consider a tax-free status one of those rights. Wait a minute! There we are, Eugene! There we are again! Tax-free. I mean, yeah, that's what we've got, you know. Stop it, Bob. Nor, in the Crown's view, was the right to dress up like Indians and dump tea in a harbor specifically guaranteed by the Magna Carta. The tarring and feathering of tax collectors was another uniquely American argument for home rule and full representation in Parliament. Given these provocations, the royal response was remarkably tolerant. Boston, for its antics, endured a naval blockade and martial law. Dublin would have been leveled. America's lenient treatment reflected the king's and his ministers' views on child-rearing. Britain took the note of mother country quite literally, and the colonies were going to be brought up in the best traditions of the Tory nursery. While conception and birth required the presence of at least one parent, a proper British child tried not to be a further inconvenience. The good little Tory would keep a respectful distance and follow either his parents' example or their advice, whichever was the more reputable. The bad little Tory, however, was not punished. The parents never bothered and the servants never dared. Any physical or psychological abuse could wait until the daughters married or the sons went to Eton. If this was the proper way to raise a family, it also seemed a proper way to run an empire. The mother country had no compunction about beating the servants, Scotland and Ireland, but those precocious colonies simply needed the guiding hand of more British and Hessian nannies. Like I said, Eugene is brilliant. TheStreet.com, look for Eugene Feinerman, F-I-N-E-R-M-A-N. It goes on at length. What America presumed was its Declaration of Independence, Britain saw as a handwritten note saying that she was the worst mother country in the world and that her colonies were running away from home. Judging from that letter and an armed rebellion, the Americans obviously wanted attention. The question was what kind they deserved. In Parliament, the Whigs showed a gleeful sympathy to anyone who embarrassed a Tory government. Embracing the Americans as aggrieved British subjects and prospective Whig voters, the Liberals favored giving the colonies whatever they wanted. like I said, this is quite lengthy. Go and read this. TheStreet.com. Our good friend Eugene Feinerman Esquire author. We are coming up on the top of the hour. Lots more stuff to get into yet, including, that hateful, skinny blonde with the 5 o'clock shadow or whatever that has a book out. We will be back. The phone number, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Officials expect to decide tonight whether to go ahead with tomorrow's scheduled launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery. A possible delay was announced today after inspectors found a crack in the foam insulation on the fuel tank. Later, a small piece of foam fell off the fuel tank. That could lead to a buildup of ice just before the launch. At the Gaza Strip border, Israel has massed troops and armored vehicles as a deadline ticks down. Earlier, Palestinian militants said Israel had just one day to release 1,500 Palestinian prisoners. If that deadline is not met, they implied they would kill an Israeli hostage they've been holding for just over a week. Israeli officials have said they will not bow to those demands. In North Carolina, a former U.S. soldier has been charged with raping and killing an Iraqi woman and three of her family members. He'd already been discharged from the Army, so he could be tried in either a civilian or military court. Across Iraq today, at least 16 people were killed and dozens wounded in scattered attacks, including two bombings. Among the dead is a U.S. Marine. In Vienna, Western diplomats say Iran has until July 12th to abandon its nuclear ambitions. A European official says if Tehran does not accept the terms of a package offered by the West, which offers various incentives for an end to the program, efforts to impose UN sanctions will resume. In Valencia, Spain, at least 34 people were killed today and more than 30 injured in a subway derailment. But officials say the train was not sabotaged. Rather, they say it was traveling too fast when a wheel broke into pieces and caused a derailment. In Afghanistan, 30 Afghan detainees have been released from a U.S. military base. An official said some of the men had been held for more than a year. In New Jersey, the governor and lawmakers will meet tomorrow to talk about ending a budget crisis. At the meeting, they're expected to discuss a proposal to raise the state sales tax to help close the deficit. When the July 1st deadline passed without agreement, the governor ordered all non-essential state services shut down. In Washington, a federal judge has issued a temporary restraining order against the Navy. For this week only, certain sonar technologies cannot be used during a U.S. warfare exercise in the Pacific. Also in Washington, the Pentagon has told Congress that it plans to sell $5 billion worth of weapons to Pakistan. Also, the U.S. announced today that it will give Afghanistan $2 billion worth of new military weapons.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Goldman Sachs has given its chief executive, Henry Paulson, a more than $18 million cash bonus. The firm says that's to reward his recent performance. Paulson has been tapped to become the new U.S. Treasury Secretary. The U.S. manufacturing sector grew at a slower-than-expected pace in June due to high energy and raw material prices. Some analysts see that as a sign that the economy is not overheating. U.S. construction spending fell 0.4% last month, thus despite analysts' expectation of a slight rise. Some say today's numbers are further signs that the housing market is cooling. Nissan has announced it wants to hold talks with GM and Renault on a possible alliance. The talks will proceed if GM supports the proposal, and Renault's board met in France today to discuss the issue. Honda has announced expansion plans in India. By next year, the automaker plans to double its production capacity and set up a subsidiary and invest about $650 million over a 10-year period. Walmart estimates its June sales will rise 1.2% at its U.S. stores that have been open for at least 1 year. Final results are expected on Thursday. The average price of gasoline last week rose by more than 6 cents to $2.93 a gallon. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 78 points, NASDAQ up 18, S&P 500 up 10. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Here. Je suis ici.
Yeah, my French is almost as bad as my English. 5.5 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, I know. You love it when I speak French, Agnes. That's because your ancestors were the Norman barbarians, absolutely. Well, they were. Descended from Rollo. Rollo, the Viking. Yes, Rollo the Viking settled in what is Normandy and became the Norman people. Fascinating story. If you go to AP.com, maybe you can still find it. This is a real mind bender for those of you who enjoy this sort of thing. It showed up on the science page of Sunday's Charleston Gazette, talking about the human family tree. And just to give you an idea of what's in it, if you go back, if you were able to trace your genealogy back about 5,000 years, or say get into a time machine and go back to a village 5,000 years ago, the first person you met would be the ancestor of every single human being alive on planet Earth today. I don't pretend to have the mathematics to comprehend it, but you know some of it's simple exponential doubling or whatever. I don't know. You know, you got two parents, four grandparents, eight great-grandparents, and onward. And pretty soon, go to the Associated Press homepage, see if you can find this story. Because if you like to wrap your mind around some of this stuff, and of course I have, you know me, I have an agenda. I take my agenda everywhere I go. I sleep with my agenda under my pillow. 5,000 years. 5,000 years ago, everybody has common, this is common ancestors. Everybody on this planet. As the excerpt, you know how they print the box inside the story, the excerpt that was chosen by the Charleston paper from the story, all of us have ancestors of every color and creed. Every Palestinian suicide bomber has Jews in his past. Every Sunni Muslim in Iraq is descended from at least one Shiite. And every Klansman's family has African roots. How can this be? It's simple math. Well, I don't think there's any kind of math that's simple out there, but it's food for thought. It's that lovey-dovey sit on the ground and sing Kumbaya and weave daisies into chains kind of stuff from the late 60s and early to mid 70s. We really are, what was it? Sly and the Family Stone, wasn't it? The Family of Man? No, it turns out it's true. In other words, George Bush is murdering his cousins in Iraq. Our government, by murdering civilians in Iraq, is participating in literal fratricide. It throws a kind of different light on it, doesn't it? Reports today that X number of Taliban were killed in Afghanistan. Now, I don't mean to get all squishy and smarmy and stuff, but that's family. You know, paleblue.org, that thing that I'm so fascinated with, that photograph shot by Voyager on its way out of the solar system, that literally shows Earth as a pale, teeny, tiny, pinhead dot. And nobody's ever gotten off the planet alive and stayed that way. No one has come back to tell the tale. And so, well, you know, all we've got to kill is family, so it looks like family's what we're going to kill. If you can find this article, chew on it. Read it. Digest it. You mathematically inclined people will find this fascinating. It means when Muslims, Jews, or Christians claim to be children of Abraham, they are all bound to be right. No matter the languages we speak or the color of our skin, we share ancestors who planted rice on the banks of the Yangtze, who first domesticated horses on the steppes of the Ukraine, who hunted giant sloths in the forests of North and South America, and who labored to build the Great Pyramid of Khufu, Olson and his colleagues wrote in Nature. And a Yale University statistician named Joseph Chang decided to figure out how to estimate when the last common ancestor of everybody on Earth today lived back then. He published a paper in the journal Advances in Applied Probability. I don't think they run... there's no comic section in that. Chang showed that there is a mathematical relationship between the size of a population and the number of generations back to a common ancestor, and my head is already swimming. Plugging the planet's current population into his equation, he came up with just over 32 generations, or about 900 years. And he knew that was wrong. He knew that was too recent. But he kept plugging away. And, I mean, these are some highfalutin types. I mean, this guy's a Yale statistician. Another guy gets on board who's at MIT. And you know, is this just sort of scholarly beer and Skittles? Just something, or is there a point or a purpose behind it? It says a lot, I think. Because it says a lot about how humanity has progressed. We are a great big selective breeding, apparently a selective breeding experiment that we have carried out on ourselves. Apparently, what most of the people in Great Britain are related to Edward the or descended from Edward the Third. Who was that? The Black Prince. And I don't mean to be boring in any of this, because this stuff does fascinate me, and I try to share the stuff that that fascinates me with you in the hopes that you too will be fascinated and ponder it and think about on it, you know. And Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. But beyond the simple thing of, oh look, you know, we're killing cousin Ahmed in Iraq. If you really took something like this and took it to heart, would warfare become dramatically more difficult? I mean, you all know the story. I've been loath to touch upon it because you've probably seen or heard or read the details of it at such immediacy and such frequency that you're just nauseated by it. But it is a fact that apparently American soldiers stalked and then planned the rape of a little girl in Iraq. Marines, mind you, duty, honor, country. Is that the right order? Duty, country, duty, honor, duty, country. Something like that. Those guys stalked and planned a rape of a little 15-year-old girl in Iraq. And then to cover their crime after they had done it, they poured fuel on her body and tried to burn it. Do I have the story right? Now, if you realized, and or does it matter? I don't know. I love genealogy. I love the fact that on my mom's side, we can trace back several generations to a couple of little troublesome people who managed to get the ball rolling over here. We can trace back down another branch of the tree and find the guy who went native and married a Native American wife and all kinds of stuff. So I'm predisposed to be interested in this kind of thing. And, you know, families of ethnic origin often ethnic origin, geez, I'm such a wasp. Take pride in knowing, you know, was it grandfather or great-great-grandfather who came over on the boat, yada yada. And they hang on whether it be Mexican or whether it be Italian or Irish or they'll hang on to that heritage because it does mean something. And as a function of that, it colors the way you look at your world. And for me, knowing that we all have a common ancestor, I mean, cousins, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, we have a common ancestor some 5,000 years ago. And all that person did was get up every day and go to bed every night and try to get by. But they survived and they reproduced and bang, you, me, Agnes.
Is that anyone related?
Ew.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah, if we could recover our sound bites, this would be the part where we'd play the
dueling banjos.
No, from the David Spade movie. You're my sister.
Right.
Ooh.
Right.
No, but I kid, but in all honesty, if we actually took this information and absorbed it, could it change the course of existence on this pale blue dot? I mean, do you realize that... let it sink in. Mao and Richard Nixon were kinfolk. Winston Churchill and Adolf Hitler were distant relations. Abraham Lincoln and John Wilkes Booth were kin. Do you see the profundity of all this?
They say family loves you best.
Apart from all the rest, how'd you like to play, Mrs. Lincoln? But there's something to all this. There is a reality to it that is worth us paying attention. Because we're going to have to learn a lesson pretty soon that we dare not ever let something like Iraq happen again. We're going to have to take the attitude toward Iraq that survivors of the Holocaust take to that. Never again. Never again. We must be on guard and whatever it takes. Never again. You realize that George Bush is kin to Osama bin Laden? Well, that one I don't have such a hard time with. Anyway, let's take a break. This is Head On. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. Email flies right into bob@headonradio.com. And we'll be right back on the Head On Radio Network.
Children drunk lemonade, and the morning lasted all day, all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over $292 million, a $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
I feel like I need to be sitting in a bar, you know, with a bourbon and with lots of smoke in the room and a filterless cigarette. What was that, Agnes?
That was Pink Floyd's Wearing Inside Out, Thank You, ELO Fan.
Oh, Thank You, ELO Fan. Yes. That's very nice.
That's beautiful.
I like that a lot. You guys, see, you guys make this show. Let's go back to the phones for a minute. Interesting piece of information from our friend David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Doing okay.
I wanted to read you this latest thing that Wired grabbed up from Senator Ted Stevens.
Oh, no, this has got to be good. If it's from Ted, it's got to be good.
It's on net neutrality, and it's golden.
No, okay.
They actually grabbed the whole 10-minute clip, but they transcribed the funny part on it. He says, "There's one company now you can sign up and you can get a movie delivered to your house daily by delivery service, okay? And currently it comes to your house. It gets put in the mailbox when you get home and you change your order, but you pay for that, right? But this service isn't going to go through the internet rent. And what you do is you just go to a place on the internet and you order your movie, and guess what? You can order 10 of them delivered to you and the delivery charge is free. 10 of them streaming across the internet. And what happens to your own personal internet? I just the other day got an internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday, and I just got it yesterday. Why? Because it got tangled up with all these things going on the internet commercially. So you want to talk about the consumer? Let's talk about you and me. We use this internet to communicate, and we aren't using it for commercial purposes. We aren't earning anything by going on that internet. Now, I'm not saying you have to or you want to discriminate against these people. The regulatory approach is wrong. Your approach is regulatory in the sense that it says no one can charge anyone for massively invading this world of the internet. No, I'm not finished. I want people to understand my position.
Oh, my God.
I'm not going to take a lot of time. They want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet. And again, the internet is not something you just dump something on. It's not a truck. It's a series of tubes.
Are you telling me that this exists in audio form, David?
This exists in audio form.
Oh, my God, I must have this.
I'll send it to you. It's actually 10 minutes.
Oh, Lord.
But you don't understand.
It's not a truck.
Yeah, and if you don't, it gets better. And if you don't understand, these tubes can be filled, and if they are filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line, and it's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material. Enormous amounts of material. Now we have a separate Department of Defense internet now. Did you know that? Do you know why? Because they have to have theirs delivered immediately. They can't afford getting delayed by other people. Now, I think these people are arguing whether they should be able to dump all that stuff on the internet or to consider if they should develop a system themselves. Maybe there is a place for a commercial net, but it's not using what consumers use every day. It's not using the messaging service that is essentially to small businesses to operation of families. The whole concept is that we should not go into this until someone shows that there is something that has been done that really is a violation of net neutrality that hits you and me. He actually said that on the floor.
You know, something just dawned on me, David. I heard a story that driving back home this evening, right before I got the traffic ticket, I heard a story on NPR about how they're trying to repeal Alaska's marijuana possession decriminalization or legality, because
right.
It's legal in Alaska to possess as much as 4 ounces of marijuana. Now I know why they want to decriminalize it. Ted Stevens is whacked out of his mind.
This guy is completely.
That's the only explanation for something like that. I mean, he rolled up a big old ugly blunt, fired it up in the Senate cloakroom, and oh man, you know, and came out and lost his mind.
He is the mascot for Just Say No to GOP dementia.
Well, did he get around to threatening to quit the Senate again like he did over the bridge to nowhere?
This clip is actually 10 minutes, and it came via Wired. Somebody on Wired grabbed it on a blog, and I guess it's making its way through the internet.
Oh, shoot me the link, because that's one for the ages.
Okay, I will. And I also wanted to mention one thing that I think is really important. It has nothing to do with politics, but tonight on Coast to Coast AM, a doctor by the name of Clifford Pickover is going to be on, and he's going to be talking about Mobius strip.
Yes.
Different dimensions, parallel universes, and he is he's quite the trip to listen to. A lot of conservative scientists are afraid of him because he has a lot of credibility, and he's talking a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't even want to touch.
Oh, that the string theory stuff and the parallel universe stuff just blows my mind.
I mean, he gets into it all. I mean, he talks about how the drug DMT, you actually see elves in the Crystal City. And, I mean, he goes into it, like, in detail of, like, the studies that have taken place. And he's really into mathematics and puzzles. So that's what makes him kind of on a different cut from a different cloth.
Well, that reminds me, I saw the trailer the other day for the film opening later this month, I guess, for A Scanner Darkly.
Oh, that's going to be good.
I think that's going to be very good. I read that novel when I was maybe 12, 13 years old, and it just changed. You know, so many things you run across at that age can just change you. And, this was one of them. And the thing is, I had no idea I was going to grow up into a world in which that became truth.
I think Philip Dick was channeling directly from the ether. I guess I don't know how any other way to put it. I think people mentioned Orwell and Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, Philip Dick.
Yeah, he's really like, to me, he was like he's like the William Burroughs of like sci-fi.
Yeah, well, he deserves more, you know, and he had a rather hellish life, if I understand it correctly. But I don't know if it's necessarily a matter of prophecy or anything magical, but some people have a better ability to put two and two together than others do. And he saw where the culture was headed at a time when it was unimaginable to other people. And, you know, this movie is set 7 years in, 7 years from the present is the way the trailer put it. And of course it's animated.
You know, to me, the other one that speaks greatly to me, I think people should get the graphic novel sometime and read it or just look at it, is V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it, but Alan Moore was just a genius of what he was coming across of how England was going to become. He took it to a different direction of what Orwell was thinking. He was saying, okay, now that we are in this state, what happens if you have somebody who was brought up and tortured under this duress, and all he knows is anarchy and chaos, and that's the way to be. And he made it look like he didn't make the person be a hero in it. He was criminally insane. In the movie, he's criminally insane, and there's literally no sympathy for any of the characters in the book. And he basically just says, "This is what's going to happen to England. Watch and see." And I mean, the things that Alan says about it, I mean, he's a well-read individual, and I guess it's happening over here in America. He had his name taken off the movie. I think I mentioned this before in this program, because he did not want to be associated with it because the Matrix brothers didn't have the balls to say they were making a commentary on America.
And
that's what they were doing essentially. And in some ways he's right. And he said, "Why didn't you just mention America? He says you were scared to do it." And he said, and then he didn't like how Joel Silver was. Joel Silver said he went to dinner with him, and Alan Moore's never been at it. Never went to dinner with Joel Silver, so he said, "Take my name off the credits." He also did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was ruined. He didn't even go see the movie because that's how much he doesn't trust Hollywood.
Well, there's not a lot to trust there right now. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing all the King's Men when it comes out. And you know, Sean Penn did it. It's got quite the cast, and yet I'm still nervous because it's my favorite novel by an American author, and I'm scared to death that the message is going to be butchered right out of that. David, thank you so much. We have found the audio.
Okay.
And I don't know if we're going to try to clip it later.
I mean, it's 10 minutes, so, you know, you might have to cut it up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we might just burn up 10 minutes, because 10 minutes of absolute rank acid-dripping insanity is worth it once in a while, just to show where the Republican Party kind of lives and breathes.
I agree with you, Bob.
All right, thanks, David.
You have a good evening and a great holiday.
You too.
All right,
later. Bye now. Wired... blog.wired.com. You can read the transcript of this, what David just shared with us. Ted Stevens is insane. You know, but so what? So is the rest of the Republican Party. And, you know, I took my chastising to heart about making mention of spending much time at all on Flush Flimbaugh or Ann Coulter. You know, they're freaks. You say they're freaks and you move on. Really, that's true. Sometimes, though, you have to come back to it just for a minute or two, because some of this is important. And again, I couldn't be reading this if this was not a real Sunday copy of this Perspective C section of the Charleston Gazette. Above the fold, on the right-hand side of the page, bold black headline: Coulter doesn't speak for all GOP. Now, this is obviously the opinion section of the newspaper, but I would can we say, because that comes across like news. I mean, here's the headline on the other side of the page: Physician Payment Disclosure Form Lame. Okay. Coulter doesn't speak for all GOP, and it's an opinion piece by a guy named B.J. Cooper. You dirty, dirty-minded woman.
No, I'm not. I was just laughing
at B.J. Cooper.
No, at the opinion section being with that.
No, you weren't. B.J. Cooper. And who is B.J. Cooper? B.J. Cooper is former deputy press secretary to Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, and served as communications director of the Republican National Committee under four chairmen. Yeah, I'll bet. With a name like that. He currently is Deputy Managing Director of APCO Worldwide, a communications and public affairs firm in Washington. Okay? And like I said, the headline says, Coulter doesn't speak for all GOP. Now, this is ostensibly on Saturday and Sunday, the Charleston Gazette is married up with the Charleston Daily Mail, which is a shameless little ugly right-wing rag. And so the Daily Mail does its ugly right-wing rag thing in the afternoons, and the Gazette does its moderate sort of centrist thing in the mornings. All right? But on the weekends, they're married up. So this guy, B.J. Cooper, who worked under, you know, the Deputy Communications Director, Deputy Press Secretary for Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, in other words, Ronald Reagan, you know, Iran-Contra Ronald Reagan? You know, this guy served out a filthy swill of lies on a daily basis. You know, things like, the president cannot recall if he remembers whether he has a recollection of who's John Negroponte? What? Huh? Next question. Salvadoran death squads? CIA cocaine running, Oliver North with a private stash of money in small bills and coins in the closet of Oliver North running naked down the... Yeah. Okay, too much visual information. I apologize. But yeah, that Ronald Reagan. George H.W. Bush. October surprise. Filthy little war, the April Glaspie memo, Gulf War One. So, this guy with the stellar creds writes as follows: I'm a Republican. Ann Coulter does not speak for me, but a lot of people think she does. the loudest, noisiest, most sensational, and now most repugnant voices on the Republican side of the political spectrum are defining Republicans. I could blame cable television, but it is tough to blame cable for preferring long-legged, blonde female Republicans to balding, middle-aged guys like me. They sure make for better-looking TV. Guffaw, guffaw. To me, Ann Coulter's exercise of her right to free speech is the political equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. She crosses the line of decency. To me, individuals who engage in name-calling and hate speech to get attention, sell books, increase speaking fees, and feather their own nests are speaking for themselves, not any political party. You got this? Of course, he's lying. He worked for Ronald Reagan and George Bush. Lying is what B.J. Cooper does. He is a professional liar. As a consequence of all of this, you gotta see. They're trying to distance themselves from her. Because the fact of the matter is, they do share her opinions. They are all as nasty as she is. But there's an election coming up, so they've got to appear, I am middle of the road. I do not believe in the hate speech that Ann Coulter speechifies. You see? They have to do that because they're desperate to keep power. But you know what? You'd think that Godless was the first first little hateful tome she had published. Well, Sunshine, you and me know that it's not. Treason, How to Talk to a Liberal If You Must, Godless, how many other books? I don't know, okay? And in every one, there's been something, you know, okay, so the tagline for this one is that she thinks that the widows of 9/11 are blood-sucking monkeys from outer space or something. Well, there was an entire book devoted to Joe McCarthy was a really good guy, and why don't you Democrats just get in line and swear allegiance to the Comintern, and how she is. I once worked for a senior Reagan administration appointee back in the 1980s, who used to say of the right wing, they like to look good losing. Translation, they'd rather go down defending their principles than by, as a democratic government is supposed to do, finding a compromise that makes progress. You see, B.J. Cooper wants to compromise now that it looks like he's going to be, he and his filthy little fascist party are going to be ridden out of town on a rail. Oh no, he's all for compromise. Where was B.J. Cooper when the Medicaid prescription drug benefit was passed by virtue of literally bribery, arm twisting, and physical threats? Where was he? Nowhere to be seen. All right? So I see this kind of thing, and I go just a little bit crazy. And I hear this revisionistic crap, like I heard on Wingnut Radio today, if Democrats had had control of Congress for the last 4 years, our budget deficit would be twice what it is. Because, you know, they're tax and spenders. And like Osama would be the pastor of the First Holiness Baptist Church, because that's what Democrats do. They make our enemies they bring them to America, and our country. Honest to God, And whoever this little weird no-talent bum that was filling in for Flush was, yep, that's right, that's right. They would be. That, you know, Democrats can't be trusted with money. You know, so you know, we gotta be cognizant of that. I don't know how many people read B.J. Cooper's little screed in the Sunday paper in the Charleston Gazette and went, "Oh well, okay, that's great. That's by God, that's Republican we work with." No, it isn't. There's no such thing. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'll be back. No one needs anyone, they don't even just pretend. Jonah's an American. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of America.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. But something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
Not yet. Just like Thurgood Marshall said to Richard Nixon. Not yet. So it's 11 minutes before the hour. Another little something from the list of grievances by the framers, or the authors of the Declaration of Independence. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers. Okay. From time to time, they sort of showed their hands as a little less enlightened than what we might have liked. The merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. But, follow, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Well, thank you, guys. Yeah, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for Philadelphia 1776, and somebody tell those enlightened, fairly enlightened souls what is happening in 2006, and see if Tom Jefferson and Ben Franklin and John Adams and the rest of them don't just go run screaming into the night. Our bad! Redo! Let's go to the phones. David is with us from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Those founding fathers simply want to come out of the grave, jerk George's head off, and down the hole.
Oh, yeah, I know.
He said euphemistically.
Yes, of course. Because there's no such thing as ghosts.
Exactly. Agent Fred, title chart, here I come up the Potomac.
Yes, Agent Fred, tonight we have sponge cake.
Special brownies.
Huh.
You know, with 4 pounds of shake cooked in butter over 400 degrees before we... shouldn't talk about that.
No, don't tell Fred about the 420 brownies.
Well, I was really set upon, ignited, set in motion, you know, agitated to call. I think the world has shown, Dan. I believe, I know, I am convinced. He's proven it a million times. He's a hell of an actor. But if he wants to take on that earlier production of All the King's Men, and he wants to mount a rival production, oh, baby, he better be really ready to work.
Well, Broderick Crawford was no slouch.
Broderick Crawford, 3 Oscars. Joanne Drew, John Ireland, and a host of character actors to die for. He really better work his butt to the bone, because he's got a huge ass hurdle to get over.
Well, it is. It's going to be a tall order. I've heard good things about it, but there's so much. Frankly, I've read the book a million times, David, and there's so much stuff in it, I don't know how you can possibly make a movie out of it. Because the first movie was brilliantly done, but it still didn't do credit to the text.
No, but if you were a kid that had not read the book...
Oh!
...and you saw the movie, and you were coming of age politically, and you had seen things in your home county that were an acute and immediate and painful parallel.
Exactly.
You didn't need to have read the book
for
the movie to have put a fire under your butt watching, you know, for 75 cents watching that movie.
No.
Well,
I've still got it on videotape somewhere around the mansion.
As well you should. And I may have it again just, you know, because I've lost it a time or two. Well, that's where Sean, as either that editor or a very, very exceptionally talented editor, says, we're going to take about 20% of that book and we're going to make it very streamlined, and we're going to make a very concise and focused, I hate that word, because a bunch of people that get paid big money for seminars have beaten it into the ground. Anyway, a very concise editing job could give him what he needs to make a heck of a movie. And I hope he does.
Now, one of the things I find fascinating about that film, David, is that one of the producers in on it was James Carville.
Really?
Really.
Boy, that ups the ante.
Now, it really did. Kind of does, doesn't it?
You bet your butt it does. Good Lord. I mean, who? Good. Oh, please. Come on, James.
Producer or consultant or, you know.
Don't just put your name on it so that people get pulled in.
Now, I think this actually was somewhere. It was like his dream.
Well, it certainly sounds like something that would be his dream. Because for all of his rambunctious nature and some of the things that he's done that I'm not comfortable with, I firmly believe he's of the same win-at-all-costs mentality as a Lee Atwater, but I think Lee Atwater wants to win for his personal gain. I really believe Carville wants to win for the country.
Yeah, I tend to think so too. I mean, I don't think if
the wingnut.
If it was a personal gain thing, I don't think he could be married to Mary Madeline.
No, boy, talk about, well, never mind. Never mind what we could say about that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, at least she rearranged the furniture for him. That's cool. Well, I'll pay for that one somewhere else.
Yeah, that one that went on the karmic ticket.
Yeah, you betcha. Well, it's got some company in it. There's bigger ones than that. But anyway, that's very, very, very interesting that Carville could be part of that. I hope he's part of it. I hope he's not just a name, you know, in the credits.
I'll check IMDb.com. I'm pretty sure that he had a real hand in it.
My son is a friend of a guy that is a total film nut, having studied in colleges in other big states to start with C. And, you know, I'll know in a few days whether or not I'll know what the story is based on everything that my son's friend can find out.
Well, I'll know it here in a matter of seconds. Really, I will.
Oh,
if I can just spell all the King's Men. Yeah, there it is. Okay, I'm just looking down through here. Anthony Hopkins is in it.
Wow.
He plays Judge Irwin. Remember Judge Irwin?
Oh, yeah.
Kate Winslet is Ann Stanton.
Oh, this just sounded well.
Jude Law is Jack Burden.
By golly. Sean, I tell you what.
And Sean, of course, is the boss.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, baby. Well, let's start with a short podium and lift.
Yeah. I kept thinking it was coming out at some point. Yeah, executive producer James Carville.
Well, now. You know, most people don't realize that Broderick Crawford was a very well thought of Broadway actor.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, of course, when I was a little kid, it was black and white reruns of Highway Patrol.
Yeah. Every week there was a different automobile, so they could pull a different company. I mean, they actually had Nash's in Highway Patrol. Hell, as California Highway Patrol cars, simply because they bought the privilege.